Master, Holy Prophet Muhammad and his pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Assalamu li wa ana ujza bihi. Fasting is mine, and I, Allah, is saying this, and I am the reward, I shall be rewarded. Now, we've spoken about this tradition. As-sawmu li, sawm is a gerund. We have it in English grammar too. The Arabs call it master. And sometimes gerunds can be used as present participles. So, fasting, which has no time assigned to it, it's a master, it's a gerund, there's no time in it. It's only the action per se, fasting, is mine, Allah's. Sometimes the gerund in Arabic rhetoric becomes converted to what they call fa'il, the agent, the faster. Like adl, which means justice, as master, sometimes it's used to mean adil, the just person. So something now, this tradition, another dimension of it, is that as-sawmu li, the faster is mine, the faster, the one who fasts. And then this lam, the preposition le in li, there are 20 types in Arabic, 20 different meanings for lam. One of them is the lam of unity. So then suddenly the tradition, the meaning becomes again different. The faster, the one who fasts, is in unity with me, with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is an important So the ultimate aim in fasting is taqwa. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ. There's no limit to taqwa. Therefore, this verse is speaking to me and you, but it's also speaking to the 12th Imam. Even if you're a ma'soom, you have to fast. Taqwa, its ultimate, has no end. The road is infinite. Then we decided to explore taqwa, and the seven broad classes of taqwa. The first was merely in relation to the sharia, doing the wajibat, refraining from the muharramat, the sins. And we spoke about that last night. We also covered the second class of taqwa, is when you even refrain from the halals, except when it has to be done out of necessity. But we said, refraining from those halals, refraining from those halals which are done Allah-lessly. Otherwise, from the wide array of different halal actions, if Allah's in the equation, you don't have to refrain from them. Okay, so now we're starting the third, inshallah, class of taqwa. Don't forget, in each class, taqwa means being immune. There are two dimensions to it. One is a refraining dimension, that you have to refrain from something, and the other you have to control yourself with something else. So have that in mind. Okay, third class, that's it. Haydar Omoli has given. Anir Riya, that's Ijtanabun. Anir Riya Ma'al Ikhlas. Right, now Riya, though I'm not sure of a proper translation for this, maybe ostentation, I'm not sure. So you, and there are many different forms of riya. The riya which we've usually heard in different speeches and so on and so forth, is in relation to the ibadat, the salat, the fasting. If there's a riya in relation to the ibadat, that's a haram action. Right? If you do salat, so a person, to impress this person, for the sake of that person, you are doing salat for whatever reason, that salat is nullified, it's batil, you have to redo it. And also, it's a sin. It's a major sin, it's a sharia sin. That's not the riyah here, though. Because if riyah, in relation to the ibadat, not in relation to the non-ibadat, for example, if I study, I'm doing it because I want to impress X person, Y parent, or Z friend. That's also riya, but it's not halal. Or I want to read the Quran to impress this person, it's riya, but it's not the haram type. The haram type of riya is only in relation to the ibadat, the acts of worship, such as salat, fasting, actions where having the intention to acquire proximity with Allah is a prerequisite. This kind of riya in ibadat is haram, sharia sin. We've gone over that, we finished that, we're in class 3 now. We covered that in class 1. That part of riya was part of class 1 of taqwa. We're now in class 3. So this is another form of riya. Here, one has to refrain from doing actions for other people's sake. That's the refraining element. And the controlling element that you have to control within yourself over time is to do actions for Allah's sake. Now things become a bit difficult. No one said that was easy. Doing the wajibat, yes, that may be easy. Only in my earlier years, as a Taliban, I once asked Ayatollah Hassan Zada Omri to give me some advice, and he said, I kept on wanting an ustad in practical things, and he said, there's no need. And he gave me 3 instructions. He said, do the wajibat, and then he added, that's easy. That's it. It's his words, I'm reiterating here. Then he said, refrain from the sins. Then he added, that's difficult. And then he said, and the third is having a halal living. Now that I'll speak about inshallah tomorrow in Muraqabah. Anyway, that's... Yes, so, here with riyah, even in relation to the non-ibadat, studying, working, playing football, entertaining oneself with different things. No one said entertainment is haram. There are many forms of entertainment which are okay, and most of them are okay. I'm just a bit afraid with this audience to give examples because of previous experiences I've had here. So I can't go into examples here, maybe later, but it's okay, as long as Allah is in the equation. No one wants to sin, that's granted. But there's a wide range of different forms of entertainment, and there's no need for you to be prevented from doing them. You're allowed to do them. But the point is this now. In this form of taqwa, this degree, this class of taqwa, one wants to do all actions for Allah's sake. Not because of your friend, family, or classmate. And that's very difficult to do. And you can't do it from tonight. You can do it very slowly. You can start tonight. But it has to be a very gradual process. Start with 1 or 2 actions. And then grow. Now there's a way to evaluate yourself if you're succeeding in this realm of taqwa. And that I'll speak more about tomorrow in Muraqabah. Tonight I just want to finish the different classes of taqwa. مراقبه is the key for you to ascend these different classes. And that will start tomorrow. I just want to go over that. But the aim here is refraining from riya. In relation to the non-ibadat, even there, you're doing it Allah li. It's always Allah is in the picture. Otherwise, you'd just be wasting your time from morning to night with the hundreds of different actions which are halal, but there's no Allah in them. But you can do something that from waking up, the brushing of the hair, eating breakfast, going to school, coming back, driving, all these actions, either it can be all void, just a waste of time, and it's not halal, just a waste of time though. Or it can all be done with Allah in the picture. So when some people say, we turn our heads and we see 3 hours has just quickly passed by. The reason for that is because there was no Allah in those 3 hours. It's all just drowned and absorbed in the worldly life. And you weren't sinning, but you were just passing futile time. Now, at this age, you have to start to practice. And that's why some people at 80, 90, 100, they have their PhDs, they have their successes in different fields. But at that age, you say, we don't know what happened. It was all a waste of time. And now it's the time. The seeds have to be sown in childhood years. So that was the third form of taqwa. The fourth, ijtinabun anil kathrati ma'al wahda. Refraining from the realm of multiplicity. I'll explain all this in a minute. Refraining from the realm of multiplicity, the realm of plurality, and controlling oneself within the realm of unity. Now what does this mean? Here, in this world that we're living in, there are millions and millions of different causes and effects. From the microphone, it's a cause to something, books, digital recorders, cars, food, all these things are different forms of causes to other things. And you in this world, you're living in this world, encountering hundreds and hundreds of different causes during the day. Here in this realm, the fourth stage of taqwa, you have to practice to start acknowledging that there's only one cause, and there's not more. Yes, you're absorbed and drowned in this world with hundreds of causes, of the car and all these different things. But you have to incorporate within yourself the understanding that there's only one cause. So when you go to the car and you put the alarm on, you have to understand the preserver of the car isn't the alarm. It's Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala. You can easily over-rely on the alarm and the key. And there's no alarm in the picture. That's the definition of being drowned in the realm of multiplicity. Because in these causes, you think the alarm is the only cause. And you give it, attach independence to it. Sometimes, you know, subconsciously, you have to come out of that subconscious. You go to the grocery to buy fruit, and you thank the grocers, and it's a good thing to do, but you forget that Allah is the nourisher. Allah is the sustainer, provides sustenance. He's Raziq. With the alarm, only Allah is Hafid, the preserver. To finish. No one else. Only Allah is Razim, not the grocers. But we get drowned again in the food, thinking that's the cause, forgetting Allah. You go to the doctors, he gives you medication, you thank the doctor, and you have to, it's the etiquette, you have to observe the etiquette. But you then think the doctor is the curer. Whereas the cause, only one, only Allah cures. Allah preserves and Allah sustains. No one else. Don't associate any of these with other than Allah. And even things like drinking water. You drink water. Why do you think we have so many du'as associated with water, saying Bismillah? The first Bismillah, say it out loud. Don't be embarrassed. We have instructions. If you can, all the other sips and morsels you've had, say Bismillah for yourself. There's no need to say it out loud. And at the end, Alhamdulillah and other du'as. When you drink the water, why do we have to say Bismillah? To remind you that the water isn't quenching your thirst. Allah is the quencher. In all these actions, the reason we have these du'as attached with all of them is because it wants you to acquire this stage where from action to action you're seeing Allah as the cause in all those different actions. But we drink Allahlessly, we eat Allahlessly, we study and get certificates Allahlessly, we work for years anonymously. It's all a game. Just all playing. I'm not saying that you can do this from tonight successfully, but it just needs practice. The younger you are, the better it is. Just make this second nature to yourselves. If this becomes second nature, it's, you know, you're on the track to perfection. Yeah. Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam came to cut the neck of his son Ismail alayhi salam. The knife didn't cut. The knife didn't cut because Allah is the cutter, not the knife. Then he threw the knife on the floor. It cut his stone into half, but it didn't cut Ismail alayhi salam's neck. He was thrown into fire. He didn't burn. Allah is the burner. There's only one cause of burning. Allah is the cause, not fire independently. There's one self-sufficient, independent cause, and that's Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Just one marginal point here. Although I did mention this in Camp Nou, so I apologize for a few minutes to those who were in Camp Nou. In wudu, when we do the wudu, unfortunately, I know you've been taught wrongly this whole idea of wudu, and as people, someone like me, and you're only focusing on the outward aspects of this wudu, and you keep on worrying about how to wash yourselves, and one time, two times, like this, like that. Be careful you don't get obsessed, enter the realm of obsession. You see you're getting, you know, obsessed, suddenly, you know, either come to me or see a scholar to help to get rid of it quickly. But if you enter the realm of obsession, getting out is almost impossible. It's very difficult. Anyway, wudu, like all other actions in Islam, has an external side which the Sharia speaks of. But the problem is we only speak about the external side. It has a lot of esoteric dimensions, this wudu. For every single aspect, there are many, many important esoteric practical lessons to take, which build you. And it's the esoteric aspects of wudu which increase your spirituality. Not only the external side. One of the reasons why we do the washing of the hands from the elbow and downwards when we wash, one of the reasons, something that we have to remind ourselves when we're washing from the elbow downwards, is that we're washing ourselves from all causes of multiplicity, from the car, to the food, to the water, to the doctor. And by doing that, appreciating and acknowledging there's only one cause. That's what we want here. And just think, one has that in mind every time one does water. Something incredible will happen over a moment of time. Now, I want to give this tradition in relation to wudu. Maybe before, if you only thought of wudu as a ritual, you wouldn't have understood this tradition. Why should it be like this? But if you understand the many esoteric layers to it, then this tradition will make sense. Now, let me just go through the tradition, then we'll start with this fifth stage of tapua. Then I do zikr musibat for the next 3 days in time. من أحدث ولم يتوضأ فقد جفاني. Whoever's wudu becomes nullified. Like they're going to the toilet, sleeping. And even those things, all those things have, you know, different esoteric definitions. Why does sleep nullify the wudu? It has an external side, okay, but esoterically, it wants you to remember the greater sleep. This physical sleep makes you, the Sharia says, if you do the physical sleep, you have to do the wudu. Esoterically, the butun, this physical sleep, is a conduit, a route to the greater sleep, wants to warn of you. This greater sleep in this world, whilst you're awake. And also, yeah, people are asleep. It wants to make you aware of that. Why you shouldn't laugh, why laughing nullifies it. All these are esoteric dimensions. Anyway, I don't want to deviate too much. Whoever's wudu is nullified. وَلَمْ يَتَوَدَّى And he hasn't done the wudu. He didn't redo his wudu. When his wudu becomes nullified, I'm not saying this, it's a sacred tradition. فَقَدْ جَفَانِي He's abandoned me, he's shunned me. It's not a haram sin, but you're losing out. Even if there's no salat, but not doing the wudu, when your wudu becomes nullified, you're missing out on something. It's as if you're abandoning Allah. وَمَنْ أَحْدَثَ وَتَوَبَّى وَلَمْ يُسَلِّ رَكْعَتَيْنِ فَقَدْ جَفَانِي And whoever's wudu becomes nullified. And they do the wudu, but they don't execute 2 units of prayer to acquire proximity with Allah. فَقَدْ جَفَانِي They've shunned me. In fact, they've abandoned me. You've still wasted something. You're missing out. You're missing out on something incredible. وَمَنْ أَحْدَثَ Whoever's wudu becomes nullified. وَتَوَدَّى And they redo the wudu. وَصَلَّى رَكْعَتَيْنِ And they do 2 units of prayer. وَلَمْ يَدْعُنِي But they don't supplicate to me. فَقَدْ جَفَانِي They've abandoned me. They've done the wudu. They've done the 2 units of prayer. But they haven't supplicated after the prayer. You've just wasted a lot of time. You're missing out on something. You've abandoned me. Man ahdatha, one whose wudu becomes nullified. Watawadha, they do the wudu. It's not for salat either. Do wudu for wudu. Wasallu rak'atayn, you do the 2 units of prayer. Wada'ani, and you supplicate to me. وَلَمْ أَجِبْهُ فِي مَا سَأَلَنِي مِنْ أَمْرِ دِينِهِ وَدُنْيَاهِ If I don't answer to what you have supplicated, what one has supplicated to me, in matters of the world and in relation to one's religion, if I don't answer, فَقَدْ جَفَوْتُهُ Verily I, Allah, have shunned you. وَلَسْتُ بِرَبِّنْ جَعْفُ And I'm not abandoning or shunning Lord. That's incredible. Look at this instruction. This instruction since the great ulama, such as Ayatollah Hasan Zada Omari, I don't prescribe for my for myself telling you what to do. But these are things which the great ulama have advised in relation to common audiences. There's nothing dangerous about it. But look at this wudu. It's only if those esoteric dimensions, if they are controlled and they are acknowledged, when you do the wudu, it creates a spirituality that if you redo it, redo the wudu, do 2 minutes of prayer and ask Allah, Allah will give. For your best interest. Now you may sometimes not know what your best interests are. Be patient. Don't groan too early. Don't complain. But this is something good. Now, you can't do this, you know, during the day 10 times. It's very difficult. But do it once a day at least. For a year, if you can. Don't overdo this. Okay. And after a year, you know, maybe twice, 3 times a day. But this is a key. It's one of those important keys. If you only thought of wudu, that external wudu, all your life, of course the external wudu alone wouldn't lead to this result. It can't, because it's spiritless. The spirit of the wudu is acknowledging the meanings of those actions. Okay. Then, the fifth degree of taqwa, اجتنابون عن التفرغة مع الجمعة. But here, one is refraining from isolating oneself and controlling oneself through being in congregation and living collectively. You have to be with the crowds. You can't isolate yourself. Once the current president of Iran, Dr. Ahmadinejad, he was speaking to a ministry of communications, I think it was, and he mentioned this very delicate point. I mean, it doesn't matter who said it, but the point is a very interesting point. And he said, he was speaking in relation to sending satellites to space. He said we have to send satellites to space, otherwise we'll be limiting ourselves in relation to being manifestations of Allah's attributes. He only said that in a sentence. This is in relation to this degree of taqwa. What does it mean? I'll just give a more simple version of it so we can all understand it. When you live in isolation, away from the people, what happens is the aim is to be a manifestation of Allah's attributes. Allah is all patient, we have to be patient. Allah is kareem, we have to be generous. Allah is forgiving, we have to be forgiving, and so on and so forth. To the best that we can. What happens is when you live alone, isolating yourself from the people, it's very difficult to acquire the attributes of patience, forgiveness, and generosity. You need to be in the congregation to be patient. You have to face people with bad behavior in order for your patience to be enhanced. You have to be with people who swear at you, lie, cause a slander against you, to be forgiving. If you want to isolate yourself, these attributes and many more, you won't be able to acquire. Now what his point was, that we can't isolate ourselves on earth to go even higher, out of space. We may, because the whole cosmos, everything in the cosmos, whatever exists, is a manifestation of Allah's attributes. By just staying on earth, not going in space, we're limiting ourselves in relation to manifesting some of Allah's attributes. It was an interesting comment, anyway. that's not to say monasticism, which the Christians have, is bad. We're not saying that. We're just saying, in relation to acquiring perfection, monasticism is limited in one's route to acquiring perfection. We're not saying it's bad. Sometimes you have to weigh the pros and cons. Maybe you may be someone, and only judge for yourself. Don't bother, don't waste your time judging other people or scrutinizing their lifestyle. Just think about yourselves. Sometimes you may say to yourself, when I am in groups and congregations, I fall into sin. For such people, for a period of time, maybe isolating oneself may be good, but it can't be a permanent thing. You have to get out eventually. You have to amend your ways. You have to refine yourself. And that's why the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam in one tradition, he says, Kun fin nas, be amongst the people. Wa la takun ma'ahum, but don't be with them. Be with them, but don't be with them. You have to live collectively in congregation, but those vicious attributes in society, don't be ma'ahum. This ma'ah is an important preposition here. Don't let vicious attributes accompany you, clothe you. And that was the sin, and that was the error, rather, of Prophet Noah's, alayhi salam, his son. وَكَانَ فِي مَعَزِلْ. He stood aloof when the ark was going. He stood aloof. That's the external meaning. Esoterically, in his life, he stood aloof. Esoterically, standing aloof in society, isolating himself from his father, from the mu'mineen, led him to stand aloof, stand afar, where the ark was going and people were drowning. The sixth degree of taqwa, ijtinabun an ash-shak ma'al yaqeen. Now these are getting a bit difficult now. It's number 6 and 7, but you know, just for completion's sake, I just want to finish these two. And also, there are 3 others after the 7th. But I didn't understand it when my ustad was teaching me. And I went to other ustads too, I still didn't understand it, so it's not fair for me even to mention them. I can only share it with you if I can feel convinced. Refraining from doubts and controlling oneself with yaqeen. Yaqeen has 3 degrees to it. Certitude, yaqeen. You may have level 1 of yaqeen, but have doubts in relation to the higher level 2. You may acquire level 2 of yaqeen, but have doubts in relation to the 3rd form of yaqeen. This stage, it's removing all doubts now. Now, what is this yaqeen all about? 2 good analogies which I want to go through. One of them, Ayatollah Jawadi Omri Hafizahullah, mentioned in one of his tafsirs, and the other one is also a good one. I'll first give the analogies and then we'll go through it. Yaqeen means certitude. Sometimes you may be in Iran and there's a land, a country called America. And you read the books, geography books, and you read about America. You have a yaqeen that America exists by reading in those books. And that yaqeen was acquired through knowledge, reading the books. Hence it's called ilmul yaqeen. Or you're a medical student And you read the book of medicine about, or you're taught, in relation to heart transplantations. You have yakin after the lesson, when you read the book, that heart transplantations is a reality. It's done. Now you've read it. That's also inner yakin. The higher, the second and higher form of yakin is called anal yakin. It's a form of, not academic anymore, it's more intuitional. Here, the person who read about America travels to America, lands in America, and now sees America. Such a person has anal yakin. The yakin which this person has, who sees America, is more than the yakin in degree, than the person who read about America. Or with the medical student sees now, before he used to read it, now he sees the heart transplantation being done by the surgeons. The yakin he has in relation to heart transplantation is more than when he was a medical student and had read about it alone. His faith in heart transplantations is more now. Before, there may have been some doubt. He had yakin in relation to knowledge-wise, but he had doubt, he didn't see it. Now that doubt has been removed because the foreigner saw America now. Now all doubts are gone. The other person has seen the heart transplantation. This is anal yakin. Then the last form of yakin, the most complete form, is hakol yakin. Here, the American, the person who was in Iran, came to America, saw America, now becomes an American citizen. He becomes an American. He has the strongest form of yakin in relation to America now. He is America. He is America. And there's nothing wrong with being in America. It's okay. The medical student who used to read, then he saw, now he's a surgeon, he's doing the heart transplanting. He's a transplantator now. Or transplanter, rather. He's doing the surgery now. He's yakin. In relation to Allah, sometimes we accept Allah's existence through reading, through books, and a number of philosophical or rational argumentations, which are okay, and that's ilm ul yaqeen in relation to Allah. Sometimes, after spiritually disciplining ourselves, reviving the fitra, suddenly, we have the capacity to see Allah with the eyes of the heart. That's ayn ul yaqeen. It's not a question of a few philosophical principles now. It's much more. You're seeing the realities of Allah manifesting. You're seeing the heavens. You're seeing the angels. Haqq ul yaqeen in relation to Allah is when you are aware of your unity with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You are now very Allah-like. Now you're manifesting Allah's attributes. That's the definition of qurb, divine proximity. They're all different. Now, you may have ilm ul yaqeen but not ayn ul yaqeen. You may have ayn ul yaqeen but not haqq ul yaqeen. Whatever it is, you have to start eliminating all traces of doubt in relation to the higher yakin. That's this step, what this step is all about. In one tradition, Imam Sadr alayhi salam has said, just to show what is classification. It's not just made on just his own speculation. It's all based on traditions and verses of the Holy Quran. And the Qalb al-Saleem, this secure heart, okay, the person with the secure heart needs the, this is the definition. الَّذِي يَمْغَى رَبَّهُ وَلَيْسَ فِيهِ أَحَدٌ سِوَى. The secure heart is one where on encountering one's Lord, there's nothing other than Allah in one's heart. Sometimes when we encounter different things, we become occupied with them. We become oblivious to Allah. But here it's a question of nothing is occupying one's heart but Allah. That doesn't mean you're not doing anything. No, you're doing everything. But whilst you're doing everything, it's always done Allah-ly. And then the next part says, وَكُلُّ قَلْبٍ فِيهِ. Whichever heart has within it shirkun aw shakkun, whichever heart has shirk in it or doubt in it. Doubt is level 6. Shirk is level 7, what will come then? Any heart which has shirk in it, that's the next degree, or doubt in it, فَهُوَ صَابِت. They are. صَابِت means they're deficient. It means cancelled, but they've made themselves deficient to some degree. They're not complete. Because they had shirk. Not in relation to ilm al-yaqeen, but they didn't grow. After ilm al-yaqeen, they were always confined in ilm al-yaqeen. They didn't grow. The younger you are, you practice these, the quicker you will enter Ain al-Yaqeen. If you start late, I'm not saying it's impossible, it's very difficult. And finally, the seventh, Ijtinaban an ash-shirk, refraining from shirk, ma'a tawheed, controlling oneself with tawheed. This, with your permission, I'll explain in more detail tomorrow in Muraqabah, because it's very much related to Muraqabah. But the verse in question is chapter 1206, وَمَا يُؤْمِنُ أَكْثَرُهُمْ بِاللَّهِ وَهُمْ إِلَّا وَهُمْ مُشْرِكُونَ. Most of those who are believers in Allah, they believe in Allah, most of them are mushrik. They have shirk. Now, shirk has degrees, and inshallah tomorrow we'll start with muraqabah, and this has to be discussed as a preface to muraqabah, inshallah. Okay. With your permission, the next 3 days, I'll just go through in English. Dhikr al-musibat, some words are brilliant, but today is the, tonight is the night where Amir al-Mu'mineen was struck by the sword, by his enemies. That's on the one hand. Also, the process of Laylatul Qadr starting tonight. Yes, I would need you to read this. It's Laylatul Qadr, where we're in the process of making our destiny for 1 year. That's not to say that our destiny will be predestined for 1 year. Everyone will be given a good potential for 1 year. It's within us all. The more you want, the more you ask, the more taqwa you have, the result of Laylatul Qadr is a potential protocol given to you for 1 year. Whether you actualize it or not, that's another issue. You sin, you won't reach to the potential which Laylatul Qadr gave you. I'm saying which Laylatul Qadr gave you, because Laylatul Qadr isn't just a night, it's a reality. to person in unity with Allah. But we'll speak more about that later. But tonight, in relation to a few words of burden, in relation to Amir al-Mu'mineen, on the night of the 14th of Ramadan, Imam Ali, Amir al-Mu'mineen, asked Imam Hassan alayhi salam, "Oh Hassan, how many days have gone by in this holy month?" Imam Hassan replied, 13 days. Amir al-Mu'mineen then asked Hussein, "How many days are left, son?" 17 days, he replied. Ali then grasped onto his beard and exclaimed, "Wallah, la yakhdibuha bitaniha idan ba'atha ashqaha. My beard will be colored with its blood by Allah, I swear, when the most wretched one rises up." After the Nahrawun War, which was between Amir al-Mu'mineen and the Kharijites, the Kharijites had decided in their assemblies that three people had to be assassinated: Ali, Muawiyah, and Amr ibn As. Amr ibn As was a commander to Muawiyah. And then the assassins were assigned by the Kharijites. For Muawiyah, they said Hajjaj ibn Abdullah should assassinate Muawiyah. In relation to Amr ibn As, the commander of Muawiyah, they assigned Amr ibn Bakr. And in relation to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, they assigned Ibn Muljam to assassinate Ali alayhi salam. Hajjaj didn't succeed killing Muawiyah. He only struck Muawiyah's thigh with his sword. Muawiyah had recovered. Ibn Bakr also failed, because that day Amr ibn As, he sent his representative to do Salat, and the representative was the Attorney General of Egypt. But concerning Ibn Muljam, when he had arrived in Kufa, he first paid a visit to one of his Kharijite comrades. His eyes fell on a woman called Qutam, and it was love at first sight. Ibn Muljam offered to take her hand in marriage. Qutam's father and the brother were killed in the Nahrawun War when they were fighting against Ali. She accepted the marriage proposal of Ibn Muljam with the following conditions: 3,000 silver dirhams, a number of slaves, and you have to assassinate Ali. On hearing this last prerequisite, Ibn Muljam disclosed to Qutam the reason for his coming to Kufa in the first place, so the two were wholly compatible with one another. Since Qutam's father had been the head of a tribe, she had contacts higher up the tribal hierarchy, and so she was able to accumulate some people to assist Ibn Muljam in this cause. Ibn Muljam had requested Shabib to accompany him in this assassination plot. On the night of the 19th of the month of Ramadan, which is right now, Qutam had started her i'tikaf, kind of spiritual retreat, which is mustahab in the last 10 days of the month of Ramadan. She started her i'tikaf in the mosque of Kufa, which had started from the night of the 14th and 15th. On the night of the 19th, she would meet up with the allies of Ibn Muljam and her own allies, one by one, exciting them, arousing them, brainwashing them, clothing them, augmenting and enhancing their focus and motivation in this assassination. Ash'af ibn Ghais, who was a munafiq and commander of Amir al-Mu'mineen, but he was a hypocrite, and he was the father of the future killer of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. His daughter poisoned Imam Hassan. Ash'af, this munafiq, was also put in the picture, because he had data, info, in relation to Amir al-Mu'mineen's whereabouts and his actions. So he cooperated with them by sending them the necessary information. On the night of the 19th, I was such as this. Amir al-Mu'mineen, alayhi salam, was at his daughter's residence, Umm Kulthum, as a guest. Umm Kulthum said, قدمت إليه عند إفطاره تبعه. A tray was placed before him, before Amir al-Mu'mineen, at iftar time. فيه قرصان من خبز الشعير. And in it, there were two pieces of barley bread. وقصتان فيها لبن ومل. And there was a vessel on the tray. And in that vessel, there was milk. And also there was salt. فَلَمَّا نَذَرَ إِلَيْهِ This is Umm Kulthum's words. فَلَمَّا نَذَرَ إِلَيْهِ وَتَأَمَّلَ When Amir al-Mu'mineen looked at the tray, which had two pieces of barley bread, and milk, and salt, he looked at the food, and he deliberated. حَرَّكَ رَأْسَهُ Shook his head. وَبَكَ بُكَاءً شَدِيدًا عَلِيًا And he started crying, a severe cry, a loud cry. قَالَ He said, يَا بُنَيَّتُ O my daughter. أتقدميني إلى أبيك إذا مين My daughter, are you putting before your father two stews, the milk and the salt? أتريدون أن يطول وقوفي غدا بين يدي الله عز وجل يوم القيامة Do you want to prolong my stagnation tomorrow? The day of judgment before the hands of Allah, stagnation being not moving towards Allah in the hereafter. Do you want to prolong that by giving me two stews? مَا مِنْ رَجُلٍ تَابَ مَتَعَمُهُ وَمَشْرَبُهُ وَمَلَبِسُهُ إِلَّا تَالَ وَقُوفُهُ بَيْنَ يَدِيَ اللَّهِ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ Whoever acquires a fondness, an affinity with one's food, with one's drink, with one's clothing, it'll just extend one's stagnation before Allah on the day of resurrection. Ya Bunayyat, inna dunya fi halalaha hisabun wa fi haramaha iqab. Daughter, in this world, in relation to the halals, we're going to be evaluated. It's in relation to the harams we'll be punished. But even in relation to the halals, don't waste your time with different things. We've covered that. Ya bunayyatu wallahi la akilu shay'an hatta tarfa'in I swear by Allah, I'm not going to eat anything until you remove one of the two stews, either the milk or the salt. After iftar, he completed his salat, and Amir al-Mu'mineen was entirely occupied with his ibadat. Now and again he would exit the house and view the skies. He would lament and weep before his Lord. Allahumma barik li fil maut. Oh Allah, assign a blessed death for me. He would constantly utter Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. He would constantly utter La hawla ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. He would recite salawat, he would say istighfar. He stayed up all night, keeping vigil. He executed the night prayer at Umm Kulsum's house. Umm Kulsum asked, Father, why all this staying up? Why all these lamentations? What is it for? Amir al-Mu'mineen declared, I shall be martyred during the morning salat. Umm Kulsum replied, O Father, please ask the son of Ummahani, Ummahani being the sister of Amir al-Mu'mineen, ask the son of Ummahani to go and lead the salat this morning. Amir al-Mu'mineen said, one can't flee from divine destiny, daughter. And Amir al-Mu'mineen prepared himself to make his way to the mosque. The adhan was being recited. Ali started his journey. On entering the house's courtyard, the ducks were all surrounding Ali, opening their wings with agitation. They would feel something is wrong here. Umm Kulthum observed the scene with amazement. She came to scatter the ducks away so that Ali may proceed. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen exclaimed, Du'uhunna, let them be. Fa'innahunna sawa'ih, tatba'uha nawa'ih. Verily their cries are to be followed with the lamentations of mourners. On exiting the house's gate, the hook of the gate's lock got hooked onto Ali's clothing. His waist scarf opened up. He tightened the scarf around his waist and uttered to himself the following words. Ushtud hayazika lil-maut fa'innal-mauta laqika. Fasten that which is protecting you, referring to the scarf, the belt, the buttons. He's saying this to himself. And be prepared for death. For verily death is but to approach you. وَلَا تَجْزَعْ مِنَ الْمَوْتِ إِذَا حَلَّ يُنَادِيكَ. Don't complain of death when it comes and calls upon you. وَلَا تَغْتَرَّ بِالدَّهْرِ وَإِنْ كَانَ يُوَافِيكَ. Don't be arrogant with respect to life, albeit in complete accordance with you. كَمَا أَضْحَكَكَ الدَّهْرُ كَذَاكَ الدَّهْرُ يَبَكِيكَ. For this life leads you to cry in the same way it brings you to laughter. Umm Kulthum, on hearing these words, and she was behind her father, kept saying, Oh Allah, help me. Oh Father, Oh Father. Ash'ath, 1 hour before the adhan of the night of the night, on the 19th day of the month of Ramadan, before the Fajr Salat, Ash'ath, who was the commander of Amir al-Mu'mineen, but the Munafiq, was talking in private with the allies. And this conversation was overheard by Hujra ibn Adi. And he was one of Ali's commanders. And he was a good, decent person. He overheard this conversation and the plans that they had for Amir al-Mu'mineen. Hujra intended to inform Ali what was going on. So he made his way towards the route or route Ali usually takes when going to the mosque. He didn't find Amir al-Mu'mineen. He went to Umm Kulthum's residence, but he was told that Ali is at the mosque. That day, he had taken another route to the mosque. Ali enters the mosque. The lights were out. He lit some candles, recited Nafile. He then recited the Adhan. He entered the courtyard and called out, As-Salat, As-Salat, loudly. Ibn Mujam, although awake, made it seem as if he was sleeping in the courtyard. He covered his sword up, stumbling to the ground. And the old woman approached him and said, "Don't sleep like this. It's Satan's way. Either sleep on your right-hand side, like the believers, or on your left, like the wise, or on your back, like the prophets." Now this "on your back," it's a code. It doesn't mean you have to lie on your back, that prophets would sleep on it, lying on their back. It's a certain code. Because most prophets were martyred, they had to lie on their back. Because too many people wanted to kill them. Ali Amir al-Mu'mineen then told them, "You," to Ibn Mujah, "you bear an intention that will lead the heavens to be cleft asunder, the mountains destroyed. I know what you're covering up." On saying these words, he made his way back to the mosque and towards the mihrab and started the salat. But Ibn Mujah paid no heed to these divine words. He sat behind the nearest column to the mihrab. Shabib and Wardan, one of Qutam's men, positioned themselves in different corners of the mosque. After coming up from the sajda position of the first unit, Shabib made his move, and on his attempt to kill Ali, his sword got stuck to the wall of the mihrab. On seeing this, Ibn Mujah attacked and managed to strike Ali on his head. And Ali, on being struck, said, "Bismillah, by the name of Allah, by Allah, wa ala millati Rasulullah, by the messenger's religion, fustu wa rabb al-Kaaba, I have attained to salvation by the Lord of the Kaaba." And then when Hujra, the decent commander of Amir al-Mu'mineen, finally got to the mosque, after failing to see Amir al-Mu'mineen, فَلَمَّا رَجَعَ, when he returned to the mosque, سَمِعَ النَّاسِ يَقُولُونَ, he heard the people shouting out, "قُتِلَ Amir al-Mu'mineen." I'll end with a few du'as and then we'll stop them. Oh Allah, we're all sinners. Forgive us our sins on this holy night. Oh Allah, we're all weak. Strengthen us against the temptations and whisperings of Satan. By the truth of this Laylatul Qadr, oh Allah, make us maximally benefit from tonight and the succeeding.